Right now, many churches are planning their budgets for the next fiscal year. You can promote your confessional Lutheran church and support the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. by joining our congregational sponsorship program, the Issues Etc. 300. We're looking for 300 congregations to include $1,000 in their mission or advertising budgets. You'll find an informational flyer on the support page at issuesetc.org. Don't miss your congregation's budget deadline, the Issues Etc. 300.
But you know, we have our Christian conservatives for Trump today, and they're in the room. Let's go.
Do I think that if somebody uses the phrase Islamic terrorism, that it's a huge deal? No.
Depression frees the Christian from the illusion that they can do everything themselves. Well, honestly, that puts you in a great position to hear the gospel.
This performance-based Christianity, you know, it's not sustaining. I mean, you can do that for a while if your life is really good, but when your life falls down around you, you need the comfort that only comes from the gospel.
Nebraska runners love Issues Etc.
We're doing this series called Classroom Apologetics, like going from class to class in the college or university or even high school. And we did one before on Philosophy 101, the typical objections or the set pieces, as Dr. Angus Manoj called them, that you're going to encounter in a philosophy classroom that is going to present a challenge to your Christian worldview, your Christian thinking, the Christian faith. We're going to continue that series here on this Friday afternoon, September the 30th, moving to the biology classroom, Biology 101. I imagine that one of the biggest objections that the student is likely to find there has something to do with Darwinian evolution. We're going to be talking about that with Pastor Charles St. Ange. Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. on this Friday afternoon. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. After our conversation with Pastor Charles St. Ange, our series Classroom Apologetics Biology 101, we're going to talk about the 40th anniversary of the Hyde Amendment. That is an amendment that for the last 40 years has seen to it that, with few exceptions, federal funding does not go to pay for abortion. Of course, the abortion industry has found a number of ways around that, and Hillary Clinton has sworn, along with the Democratic Party, that she'd like to see the Hyde Amendment abolished entirely. In the meantime, others are saying, why don't we make it permanent, not just a rider to another bill every year, but permanent. We'll be talking about that with Carol Tobias, president of National Right to Life. Then Pastor Chris Hull joins us for a review of the movie The Magnificent Seven, and it's This Week in Pop American Christianity. With Pastor Chris Roseborough of Fighting for the Faith, we're going to talk about how televangelists are using Jewish fall feasts and festivals to fleece their viewers. Our call-in number for the next 2 hours, 1-877-623-MYIE, 877-623-6943. Send us an email, talkback at issuesetc.org. A tweet at IssuesETC, the Issues Etc. comment line 618-223-8382. Pastor Charles St. Ange is a regular guest. He's area facilitator for missions in Latin America for the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. He has a Master's of Science degree, a Master's of Divinity, and a Master's of Theology in Science and Religion. He's author of the book Five Things You Can Do to Appreciate Science and Love the Bible. Charles, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Thanks for having me.
Evolution is going to figure largely into our conversation today, obviously. How do you respond to someone who says, when it comes to biology, the subject simply can't be adequately taught without teaching it from an evolutionary perspective?
Well, I think from one perspective, it's a little bit like saying you can't teach someone how a car works or how to fix it without understanding how to manufacture a car. That's clearly not true. The average auto mechanic does perfectly fine with maintaining and fixing an automobile without being able to say exactly how it is that that car is put together. So I would often have people come up to me and say, well, you don't believe in evolution, and yet you're going to go and get a flu vaccine. How do you explain those two things? And I say, explain them very simply. Evolution is a concept, a system of models and theories that attempt to explain where things like viruses and human bodies came from. Vaccines are developed by knowing how viruses and how human bodies actually work. They're two completely different subject areas. And it is totally possible to understand biology without necessarily knowing exactly where everything comes from. And the reality is, the further back in time you go on any subject, the less sure you are about anything. So I would say that it's really doesn't make sense to say you can't possibly understand biology without studying evolution. The two are very different subject areas.
With that said, does that mean that if someone does not accept macroevolution, that and the best you want to teach biology the best you can, that you should avoid the subject of macroevolution?
I think you have to ask yourself, what are you attempting to teach when you teach biology? And the more one tries to get back into things where we can't directly observe facts. So, for example, the more we try and go back into history to see things that no one was there to actually observe, the less certain we get about things. So if what you're trying to do is teach really a philosophy of where the world comes from, if that's what you're trying to do, well, then certainly it'd be very difficult to teach biology without teaching evolution. If what you're actually trying to do is to teach what we know through observation and through use of the scientific method of how life works here and now, things we can actually handle with our hands and see with our eyes and hear with our ears, then you really don't need to touch on evolution at all. And in fact, given the limited amount of time that we have to teach what is really a vast amount of knowledge, I would personally argue we'd be much better off teaching what we know and teaching how to use and manipulate the things that we can see, rather than getting into what eventually ends up being really philosophical and really open for debate and really not all that useful to things that we would like to solve here and now, like how to cure diseases. I have a friend who is a professor at a well-known university in the South, and I would often ask her, I said, you know, you work with children, you work with children's diseases. How often does evolution or any system of understanding the origin of life come into what you do? And she just sort of rolled her eyes and said, never. These things have never helped me cure a child or heal them. So I think that needs to be part of the answer right there.
So one of the first obstacles that the Christian student is going to face in Biology 101, be it in high school or college and university, is that evolution is considered to be obvious, not even up for question any longer. Talk about that.
Well, that sort of reminds me of one of my favorite quotes from science fiction author Orson Scott Card, who once wrote that we question all of our beliefs except for the things we actually believe and those we never think to question. So when you're talking with somebody and something that seems completely obvious to you is not obvious to them, you do have to step back and say, perhaps I have a preconceived notion that I've been taught that simply convinced me that something is obvious. And it's a two-way street. As Christians, we often make the mistake of, when we're talking with non-Christians, of assuming some things that are completely obvious to us. We, by the gift of the Holy Spirit, look at creation, we look at the universe, we look at all these things and see the handiwork of God. An atheist doesn't. Without the Holy Spirit, those things are simply not observable. So if that's true of the Christian, it's also true of an atheist. If you believe the universe is purposeless, it has no direction, if it has no meaning behind it, how do you explain where life came from? And really the only going model and set of hypotheses is neo-Darwinian evolution. So to you, that's obvious. The interesting thing is, though, that even Richard Dawkins said that even an atheist has to keep looking at life, looking at our biospheres, looking at the flora and fauna within those biospheres, and telling themselves, this isn't designed. It isn't designed. It isn't designed. So the atheist sort of is not quite in the same position of the Christian, because their sinful nature is trying to deny something that without sin would be patently obvious, which is that given the complexity not only of the life within our biospheres, but those biospheres themselves, that there has to be some kind of intention behind it.
Now, let's talk a little bit about other things that could be but generally aren't being taught in Biology 101, such as intelligent design. First of all, explain to us what intelligent design is as a model.
The concepts behind intelligent design are actually quite simple. And it is that in our world, especially a human world where creative intelligences exist, namely human beings, and we acknowledge that, we can create things, there are certain things in the world that we know a priori before we even pick them up that are designed, because they may well have been things we designed ourselves. You know, I built a table or I built a hammer, then I know that it didn't just pop into existence. I made that thing happen. So scientifically, we should be able to step back and say, is there a way that we can look at any given object and discern using a set of scientific rules whether that thing is designed or naturally occurring? So at its heart, intelligent design is the idea that there is a way, scientifically and logically, to look at an object and say, natural or intelligently made. You know, if you take a very obvious example, an automobile. We look at an automobile. Did the automobile just occur naturally, or was there some intelligence behind it? And so, for example, you know, we can look at the materials out of which it's made, how the parts of the device work together, the kind of fuel it's needed to run, whether it serves a purpose. And as we go through kind of that heuristic, go through all these different rules, we can answer the question, is, to a certain extent, is something man-made or is it designed? Now, once we have those sorts of rules, then we can apply them to any object. So, for example, we look at a cat, and we can ask ourselves, does this display the same properties of design and purposefulness that an automobile does? Or is it something that could just occur naturally? So that's the basic concept behind intelligent design. It's a set of rules for attempting to evaluate whether something could have just happened without any causative input, or whether something needed a cause to come into existence. What kind of cause that is, or what role that cause played in making that thing come about, are not necessarily answered through the intelligent design models. We're simply saying that there needed to be a cause at some point down the line. So there are proponents of intelligent design, for example, that believe that information and causation were built into the universe at its very beginning and then played out through different processes of adaptation. That's radically different than what we see in Scripture, of course, what we see in Genesis, where intelligent God created different kinds of living creatures in the beginning, right off the bat. He wasn't just an inputter of design at some random time at the very beginning and then simply removed himself from the process.
Pastor Charles St. Ange is our guest. It's part two of our series, Classroom Apologetics Today, Biology 101. Now, it sounds like intelligent design is just good basic science, making observations, drawing inferences, the inference that something, if it appears to have a purpose and an intelligence behind it, might well be designed and have a designer. It's also just good old-fashioned common sense. It's what we do every day in so many different ways. We'll talk about that on the other side of the break. Pastor Charles St. Ange is our guest, author of the book, Five Things You Can Do to Appreciate Science and Love the Bible.
In the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit.
Listen to chapel services live, weekday mornings from Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana. Morning Chapel from Kramer Chapel. Live, weekday mornings at 9 Central, 10 Eastern, 8 Mountain, and 7 Pacific at issuesetc.org.
Do you wish your Lutheran school offered Latin, Greek, or logic? What about German or calculus? Right now, local Lutheran schools in two different states are utilizing Wittenberg Academy to expand their course offerings. Whether it's Latin for third graders or logic for seniors in high school, Wittenberg Academy can help. for your homeschooler, or for your brick-and-mortar Lutheran school, we have solutions. To find out more, visit wittenbergacademy.org.
Essential exercise for the Christian mind. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Thanks to the following congregations for standing with us by joining the Issues Etc. 300. Holy Trinity Lutheran, Garfield, New Jersey. Grace Lutheran, Naples, Florida. St. John's Lutheran, Chicago, Illinois. St. Paul Lutheran, Unionville, Michigan. Mount Calvary Lutheran, Beverly Hills, California. Epiphany Lutheran, Door, Michigan. The Good Shepherd Lutheran, Inglewood, California. St. John's Lutheran, Sayville, New York. Apostles Lutheran, Melrose Park, Illinois. Christ Our Savior Lutheran, Elizabeth, Colorado. Grace Lutheran, Strasburg, Illinois. And Bethel Lutheran, Thunder Bay, Ontario, Canada. Find out how your church can support this worldwide outreach by including Issues Etc. in your mission or advertising budget. Just go to our website, issuesetc.org, click support, and print a one-page flyer. When your congregation joins the Issues Etc. 300, we'll publicize your congregation on the radio, at our website, and in the Issues Etc. journal, the Issues Etc. 300. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. It's our series, Classroom Apologetics, today, Biology 101, with Pastor Charles St. Onge. Folks, today is the last day to get $3 off the price of the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for September, celebrating the saints, by one of your favorite guests, Pastor Will Whedon. He has led us through the last 10, 15 years here on Issues Etc. series on the liturgy, on all kinds of liturgies, on saints' days, hymn studies, and in this book he leads you through the church year, those remembrances, commemorations, feasts, and festivals that punctuate the church year in a devotional way. Not every day of the year, but nearly every day of the year is covered by Celebrating the Saints by Pastor Will Whedon. Find out more about this devotional resource at our website, issuesetc.org. It's on every page. Or call Concordia Publishing House and order Celebrating the Saints, 1-800-325-3040. 1-800-325-3040. Pastor St. Onge, before the break we were talking about intelligent design. It strikes me as, contrary to its critics, they tend to really, really dislike intelligent design, even though it does what science does. It makes observations and in an objective way tries to draw inferences from those observations, albeit inferences of design. It seems to just be good old-fashioned common sense, the kind that people use every day.
And this is the interesting thing about science. Science is good old common sense until the stakes get very high. And high stakes can come in all sorts of forms. They can come simply in the form of money. The bottom line is it's human beings that do science. And if there is a lot of money at stake in one answer and little money at stake in another, we're going to have a natural sort of corrupt, sinful tendency to want to go towards the answer that's the most lucrative, or the one that's going to get us in the least trouble. If there is an answer that is likely to cause upheaval and trouble within our superiors, within government, within society, we're going to tend to want to shy away from that answer. You've got to be very strong morally to be able to come up with that sort of answer. In the same way, if you've got theories or models that have an implication, for example, for a higher law or a higher lawgiver existing in the universe to which we might be responsible, that's a really high stake. And I can see, as a Lutheran, as a Christian, people that would want to avoid that kind of answer. That's a pretty scary answer because it means I'm accountable to someone beyond myself. And I can't simply say it's me, myself, and I in the universe, and that's all that exists. So science is done by real people. And so intelligent design gets in trouble because as it starts getting into the issue of causation, the stakes do get very high. It starts to imply that perhaps there is something or someone behind our lives and that we aren't simply a blind product of the universe, which could be very comforting to know you're a blind product of the universe, because then I'm not accountable to anyone.
Does that help explain why so often in biology classrooms, intelligent design is either ignored or poo-pooed as not real science?
I think that has to be one of the main reasons, because the stakes are very high, and there's a philosophical reason for somebody opposing it. Because if something is truly bad science, it quickly goes away. Things that are not going away, questions that keep coming up over and over again, are coming up because there's a really high stake or because there's an unsettled question. In the words of one famous intelligent designer, beware the sound of one hand clapping. If you hear a lot of noise and somebody says, well, it's just one hand, there's got to be something else hitting up against it. So I think that's a big reason why intelligent design doesn't come up. The bottom line, though, is if intelligent design is good science, then it should make predictions, and those predictions should be falsifiable. The same goes for neo-Darwinian evolution. You should be able to make predictions, and they should be falsifiable or verifiable. And if you look at the history of the last few decades of advances in life sciences, intelligent design has made some predictions. One, for example, that's quite famous now at this point is our DNA, the vast majority of it, has to serve some purpose. Evolution hypothesized that the vast majority of our DNA is left over from a long, undirected evolutionary process. So two competing hypotheses. Intelligent design's hypothesis was the one that proved true. Evolutionary hypothesis was proved false. Good science should then tell you, well, maybe we should give a little bit more credence to the theory that we rejected. Since that's not happening, you have to ask yourself, why is that? What's really going on?
How do you respond to the objection met there in the Biology 101 classroom that evolution better accounts for the features of human life than any other set of models that exist?
I would say there are still things which the evolutionary model cannot account for and, in fact, do not fit well with its assumptions. One of the areas of research that I've done is on human conscience and specifically looking at neo-Darwinian claims to being able to explain the origin of the fact that the vast majority of human beings have a sense of right and wrong, have a sense that when they see somebody being beaten up blindly in the street, that's not right. That shouldn't be happening. Why is that the case? Evolution has to explain everything as supporting the propagation of a species. As an individual organism surviving to reproduce. So the first explanation for attempting to describe conscience simply came from saying, if you see a brother or sister being abused, you want to help preserve them because they carry most of your same genes. Well, question number one, how does that organism's genes know that that is a sibling and it carries the same genes that it does? That requires intelligence. That requires some thought. So, okay, that's a little bit problematic. So another explanation is, okay, well, suppose it's your children. You want to protect your offspring. Well, how does that explain somebody that saves somebody else's child? Well, when they see somebody else's child in danger, they would rescue them. It does absolutely no good to their genes to do that. So a third explanation was, well, suppose I were to save that sibling or that other person's child, maybe at some point down the road they would help me. Well, again, that requires intelligence. That requires thought. So all of these explanations sort of fall flat. They don't adequately explain why, as human beings, we care about other human beings who may be very different from us. And then, going a step further, it completely does not explain why we would care about the suffering of another species. An animal, a dog, a cat, an elephant, some other animal that's suffering. Why would we care about that? It does our reproductive uses, does us no good to care about another species. So I would argue that the evolutionary model falls flat in explaining a basic feature of humanity, which is our sense of right and wrong. And that was something that Darwin understood. He tried to explain it by some of those things that I just talked about, but he didn't know about genes. And at the end of the day, genes don't think about other organisms other than themselves. In fact, genes don't think at all.
So there is a little sleight of hand that we've talked about before in previous conversations, Charles, that the tendency to personify or to anthropomorphize in the theory of evolution, not only just the individual organism, whatever it may be, but whole species and therefore kind of the whole system of evolution, as though, you know, maybe it isn't all random chance. Maybe, although it has to be random chance, maybe there's some kind of will behind it.
I think that's probably the most important thing for a biology student. Beware of this sleight of hand of trying to reintroduce intention into the Neo-Darwinian system, because Neo-Darwinism cannot have intention. It cannot have goals other than the reproduction of an organism itself. The minute you try and say, well, something is good for the species, you've got to be able to go back and show that the good of the species can be reduced to the good of a member of that species and its personal reproduction. Because Darwinian mechanisms do not work on a species level. They work on an individual level. So yes, I love that that comparison. It's sleight of hand. It's don't look at what's happening in the left hand while the magic is happening in the right hand. Watch what's happening and watch where the coin is, because that's where you see an attempt to sort of pull fast ones on science students.
It's our series, Classroom Apologetics, today, Biology 101. We're talking about some of the objections you'll meet there in the biology classroom to the Christian worldview and the Christian faith. Pastor Charles St. Ange is our guest. A couple more objections when we come back. What about the objection that evolution can account for disease and genetic disorders, but other models like creation or intelligent design can't?
The Lutheran Church Missouri Synod celebrates and affirms life from the time of conception until natural death, and every time in between. For this reason, LCMS Life Ministry is a program singularly devoted to upholding the sanctity of human life, both in our church body and the culture at large. Life Ministry provides educational materials, hosts conferences, and works closely with allies such as Lutherans for Life. For more information, visit lcms.org/life and follow LCMS Life Ministry on Facebook.
Did you know that Luther Academy has been providing continuing education for confessional Lutheran pastors and lay people worldwide for more than 20 years? Luther Academy promotes confessional Lutheran theology through conferences, scholarly exchanges, and publications like Logia, the Confessional Lutheran Dogmatic Series, and Luther Digest. Find out more about Luther Academy and sign up for their free email newsletter at lutheracademy.com. lutheracademy.com.
Trinity Lutheran Church in Vilonia, Indiana, is a mighty fortress that stands as a bulwark against the attacks of the devil, the world, and our sinful flesh. We are located in Jackson County, about 2 miles south of historic Fort Vilonia on State Road 135. Join us every Lord's Day for Sunday school and Bible class at 8:30 and divine service at 9:30. Come and receive the gifts of forgiveness, life, and salvation from God's Valiant One, Jesus Christ, who has conquered death and holds the field forever.
The 500th anniversary of the Reformation approaches. A good time to ask, who are we as Confessional Lutherans? What's our heritage? The Confessional Lutherans for Christ Commission has produced the Layman's Guide to Theological History. Go to the CLCC.org and see which of these presentations and books would be most helpful to you and your fellow parishioners. And consider becoming a member with us as the CLCC seeks to help more people know what it means to be a Confessional Lutheran. The CLCC.org.
Providing artillery support for the church militant on the front lines, you're listening to Issues Etc.
Do you dread going to work out?
Performance Fitness in Edwardsville offers a fun, supportive, tight-knit community and environment. Visit them on the web at performancefitness618.com or call 618-692-5063. Performance Fitness is the facility in the St. Louis Metro East where the focus is on member results, not membership numbers. 618-692-5063 or performancefitness618.com. Performance Fitness of Edwardsville.
Does your confessional Lutheran nonprofit or church need a new website? Let WordSites help you for free.
WordSites is a volunteer-led group of technology and marketing gurus who have come together to help their fellow Lutherans. With the support of an effective website, you can clearly proclaim Christ and Him crucified to the digital world that we live in. To submit your organization for consideration or to learn more, visit wordsites.org. WordSites, your confessional Lutheran website, reformed.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks to Pastor Mark Braden and Zion Lutheran Church in Detroit for recently renewing their membership in our congregational sponsorship program, the Issues Etc. 300. Membership benefits include supporting this worldwide outreach and promoting your confessional Lutheran church on our podcast, at our website, and in the Issues Etc. journal. You can download an informational flyer under the support page at issuesetc.org and present it to your congregation's mission or advertising committee. Remember, the Issues Etc. 300. It's our series on classroom apologetics, Biology 101, with Pastor Charles St. Ange. He's Area Facilitator for Missions in Latin America for the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. He has a Master's of Science, Master's of Divinity, and Master's of Theology in Science and Religion degrees, and he's author of the book, Five Things You Can Do to Appreciate Science and Love the Bible. Charles, what about this objection that evolution can account for disease and for genetic defects and disorders, but the other models, creation and intelligent design, simply can't?
I think that this has now become the major objection to people that criticize evolutionary theory. And it's very interesting. This is a little bit of sleight of hand, too, because what it attempts to do is move the discussion out of science and into philosophy and say, okay, so we can't explain the intricate complexities of life. We can't explain the information-bearing mechanism of DNA and how it is that that drives all living organisms and how that came to be separate from the organisms themselves. How is it that you get the operating system for the computer at the same time as you get the hardware? But, they say, if what you're arguing is true, if there's some kind of God or intelligent designer, how is it that we have cystic fibrosis? How is it that we have spina bifida and MD and MS and cancers and all of these horrible diseases? How is it that we have Siamese twins? So where does all this stuff come from? And then they look at the religious people and say, you can't explain that either, because you want us to believe in an omnipotent, all-good deity and look at creation. I think if you do not have a good understanding of original sin and the depth of the fall, you could have trouble answering this question. One of the strengths, of course, of our Lutheran confessions is that when 1530 we presented the Augsburg Confession, we started with God, but the second thing we immediately talked about was sin. Sin is not that I occasionally think bad things or do bad things. Sin is a corruption that flows out of Adam and Eve into all creation. It affected everything. Because we were supposed to be the caretakers and crowning achievement of God, and by our disobedience, all of creation, as Paul says in Romans 8, now groans, waiting for redemption. And so it is perfectly compatible within our theological model to say that, yes, we see all of these signs of design, and yet that design's corrupted. We age, we die, we contract cancers. Children are born paralyzed or without vision or without hearing. These two things do go together, but that can only work if your religious system has an explanation for sin.
And this is really a problem, because actually the doctrine of sin, the teaching of sin, fully explains everything that's gone wrong in creation in a very coherent way. And if left by itself, that's probably a great diagnosis. There is also an attendant remedy to all of that, that evolution can never bring you to.
This is absolutely right. There is no hope within evolution, because hope requires a goal. It requires a purpose for these things. As Christians, we preach Christ. We preach Christ crucified. We preach a God who took on human nature, but without its intended sin. who took on the penalty of death in our place, the death that we see all over creation, which was not there in the beginning, but which came in as a result of sin. And now we can preach the hope of a resurrection, of a restoration, not only ourselves, but all of creation, so that it functions the way God originally intended it to function before the fall of Adam and Eve into sin. But evolution doesn't offer hope. It can't offer a purpose, because evolution in and of itself is purposeless. And so every time you hear people say humanity is the pinnacle of evolution, pinnacle implies a climbing, climbing implies purpose, and there is no purpose in evolution. But there is within Christian theology, and the pinnacle of all things is Christ.
One other objection that I'd like you to respond to, and that is that evolution, it actually, if you believe it and if you understand it, it encourages us to care about the world around us, our environment, whereas these other theories generally lead us to be exploitive and destructive of the world around us. What's your response?
Well, I think this comes from the fact of actual observation, not the bases of the theory. It is a sad and unfortunate fact that there are Christians who read in Genesis, you know, have dominion over all creation. And by dominion, thinking as sinful human beings, we think, oh, so it's all here for our good, and we can lord ourselves over it. The reality throughout Scripture is a reminder that creation is God's. We are caretakers. And if you caretake something very badly, you're going to have that stewardship taken away from you. On the same time, if you look at the people that are environmentalists who fight very hard for conservation of forests, preservation of the oceans, they tend to be evolutionists. So that's why people seem to make that division. But the reality is, if you look at evolution, we are the dominant species, and we're doing what got us here in the first place, which is dominating. Other species are obstacles to us continuing to propagate ourselves. If there were no other species on Earth, because of our evolved intelligence, we would be able to remake the entire world in our image. Technologically, we don't need trees. We don't need even to have clean oceans, because we can clean them ourselves. Evolution creates a humanity that really doesn't care about anything but itself, and then, of course, ultimately creates people that don't care about other people either, but only themselves. True Christian theology is quite the opposite. It tells us that creation was created for the glory of God, and then we are the stewards. And so we care about cats because God created cats. We care about porpoises and elephants and even small insects because God created them. They don't all accomplish the purpose for which God originally intended them, which I'm reminded of every time a mosquito bites me. But they are creations of God. Trees are creation of God. So we work to preserve these things, not because they are important in and of themselves, but because they are reflections of the glory of God. And so I would argue that it's Christian theology that would ultimately lead to what I would call true environmentalism, which is not preserving the environment for its own sake, but preserving it for God's sake, versus evolution, which ultimately, if you really step back, should lead you to say, who cares about anything other than me?
And that kind of leaves us on a personal note, which is the average student who, other than just trying to fulfill their core requirements in the university or college, steps into a biology class and really cares about the subject, is probably in there caring about that subject because, not just for knowledge sake, but because they want to do something good with that knowledge. They want to go into medicine, or they want to go into some other life science as well. And evolution, from a purely philosophical standpoint, can't provide that impulse to do something good with that knowledge, can it? Can't even define good, can it?
That's right. You cannot define good, because good is an abstract quality. It's whatever you decide that it's going to be. I keep going back to somebody who was not a biologist but was a philosopher, who is Friedrich Nietzsche, and said, when you ultimately lose a source of good and evil, then the only thing that exists after that is power. And so if you're in university and you want to do good and not evil, what evolution leaves you with is only the quest for power, for people to have power over others, because the species and the individual within the species that has power gets to continue to reproduce and take over. And if you don't, you lose. Versus a Christian point of view, which says all people are created equal in the sight of God. Jesus didn't pick and choose people to save. He saved the entire world. He atoned for everyone's sins. There weren't classes of people where he said, you're first in line, and then you're next, and then you're last. He basically said, the first shall be last, and the last shall be first, because what determines everything is whether you understand that this is a gift and not something you earn. So I would say, if you really want to do good, then ask yourself, what is good? If you want to go to university to learn the truth, then ask yourself, what is truth? Because if you don't ask those questions, then you will end up in a place where you're neither learning truth or good.
Pastor Charles St. Ange is Area Facilitator for Missions in Latin America for the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. He has a Master's of Science, a Master's of Divinity, and a Master's of Theology in Science and Religion. And he's author of the book, Five Things You Can Do to Appreciate Science and Love the Bible. You will find a link to his mission page and to that book at our website, issuesztc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Pastor St. Ange, thank you very much for being our guest.
Thank you for having me. It's been fun as always.
When we come back from this break, we're going to be reviewing the movie The Magnificent Seven. We'll talk a little bit about camaraderie, companionship, and bromances with Pastor Chris Hull.
When pastors talk about us, they call us ad crucem. When laity mention us, they speak of ad crucem. When non-Lutherans address us, they say ADC Rucam. But no matter how you say it, ad crucem is the place to go for greeting cards, artwork, jewelry, ornaments, housewares, church certificates, church banners, and all your gift-buying needs. Visit adcrucem.com, confessing the faith through art and word. ADCRUCEM.com.
Over and over again, I tried to let the entire book reflect this, that the holiness of all the saints is only the holiness of Jesus reflected in their lives.
Pastor Will Wheaton, author of the new book, Celebrating the Saints.
And this holiness of Christ is the thing which the saints grabbed onto in faith, and it illumined their lives.
You can purchase Celebrating the Saints by calling 1-800-325-3040 or at issuesetc.org.
Smartest listeners in radio, you're listening to Issues Etc.
Are you a homeschool parent looking for help teaching certain subjects? Or do you want your student to study the history, languages, and literature of Western civilization? Memoria Press Online Academy has live online classes with master teachers to help you. Their teachers have years of experience teaching, delighting, and moving students literally from all around the world. Your homeschool year doesn't have to be difficult. Visit MemoriaPressAcademy.com or call 877-745-8866.
College Preparation Station in Maryville, Illinois offers ACT, SAT, and PSAT test prep, scholarship application classes, college and career counseling, and more. Hi, this is Lori Konski, president of College Preparation Station. We have helped our students obtain more than $7 million in tuition scholarships in 12 years. Find out more at cpsprep.com. Let us help you create a vision and find your future. The College Preparation Station in Maryville, Illinois, cpsprep.com.